Hysteria is brought to you by ZBiotics. Between work, family responsibilities, and everyone needing something from you all day, getting together with friends can feel like a form of self-care. Whether it's a glass of wine at dinner or a long overdue girls' night, I make sure to drink ZBiotics pre-alcohol before alcohol so I can enjoy the evening. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to break down acetaldehyde, a byproduct of drinking alcohol. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme that is designed to break down this byproduct. Make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and enjoy your next day activities. ZBiotics has sold more than 14 million bottles and earned the trust of thousands, including me. I know that my kids do not care if I went out the night before. They do not care if I'm tired in the morning. They will wake me up early regardless, and so I have to be on my game every morning. So I tried ZBiotics before our Crooked Media holiday party, and I drank responsibly, and I drank water, and the next day I felt great. Try for yourself today, and if you're unsatisfied, they will refund your entire order, no questions asked. Head to ZBiotics.com/hysteria, code hysteria for 15% off your first order.
If you missed some of your favorite Crooked Pods this week, don't worry. You can now catch up on the week's best moments on MS Now on Saturday nights. MS Now is streaming an episode of highlights from your favorite Crooked Pods, packing as much analysis, funny moments, and 100% correct opinions into 40 minutes as humanly possible. Crooked on MS Now airs every Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan, and joining me today is a Hysteria fave, author, speaker, and activist, Julissa Arce. Julissa, welcome.
I am back.
She's back.
Okay. I'm so excited to be here.
So, Julissa, I'm just gonna come out the gate fast. Bestiality. And
that's a word.
Yes. It is a word. And engaging with prostitutes are no longer disqualifying for candidates to join the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Now, given now that it's okay for sheep diddlers to join our nation's most elite law enforcement organization, what do you think remains disqualifying?
I have to say, this was not in the original outline. So bestiality, I don't think anything disqualifies.
Yeah.
Like if you're a Republican, nothing can disqualify you. Like if you, are a Trump lover, then anything
goes.
You can
be a sheep lover too.
You can do all sorts of things to animals and you're good. You're good. You get a pass.
Today, we are diving into a wave of natural disasters in the Trump administration's laissez-faire response, the looming Social Security cliff, political campaigns paying influencers for content under the table, and the bizarre saga of a man impersonating a NFL player to scam women out of money. Then we wrap up with Sani Petty.
Cannot wait to talk about.
Oh, the guy?
The guy.
It's the best story of the whole week. It's a bummer week, but that's the best story of the whole week.
Yes, it is.
You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who are tired of hearing unsolicited opinions on women's bodies from men. Claire, regretfully, can you play the clip?
I'm going to come back and give you my take on Sydney Sweeney's breasts right after this break. If we're honest, we go, men appreciate women. Mm-hmm. And men women are not toxic. God made us a certain way to appreciate and want to mate with a woman. And women are made the same way to want to be with a man. And I think Sydney Sweeney is just a reminder that men are still men. I'm sorry, we are.
And women are still women.
And that's okay.
Okay.
I have thoughts.
Okay. In that was the Secretary of Transportation. That was a full-on member of the president's cabinet, an adult man named Sean Duffy, speaking for some reason about the breasts of a woman he doesn't know while his awful wife sits there giggling like she's been huffing nitrous. Julissa, what's your take here?
That was my first question. Is that his wife
That's his wife talking about
another woman's breast?
Yes.
Because
that seems rude to
her. If that was my husband, he would not be okay.
I'm just going to say, Julissa, and I don't want to stereotype here, but Rachel Campos Duffy is a Latina woman. I do not know a single Latina woman who would not.
Is she Latina, though? I don't know. I don't know that we claim her. And clearly, this is another example of why we don't claim her. Because, no, like, I'm sorry. Your husband cannot be talking about somebody else's boobs. Men shouldn't be talking about women's breasts in
into
public.
A microphone. Into a microphone.
Why? And yeah. Also, why do all these secretaries have podcasts or shows? Like, don't they have jobs? Like, this is a job. Like, why do they have shows? Like, I feel like that shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, I mean, and also he's a Secretary of Transportation, and it's not like our transportation infrastructure is hunky-dory in the U.S. Like, flying sucks worse than it's ever sucked.
Ever. But,
like, the roads and bridges are not being repaired. We still don't have a train system. Like, what if I want to go to Denver? I got to fucking drive or, like, hitchhike, you know?
Yeah, we don't even have, like, not every major city in the United States, hello, L.A., has, like, a good metro system, a mm-hmm. good subway system. Like, can we focus on that? Can I please take the subway from my house to the studio and not have to sit in 50 minutes of traffic? Well, like, can we focus on that instead of looking at Sweeney's boobs?
Well, clearly the only mode of transportation Sean Duffy is interested in is motorboating. This is going to be a real awkward segue because we have some serious news to talk about today, but I didn't want to just like jump in and immediately be like, here's something really sad. So that's why I did that.
But isn't it also sad that men are talking about women's boobies and it's all bad.
It's below him. It's below. So this is what like our cabinet secretaries are doing while there is like an unfolding environmental disaster affecting parts of the world that had nothing to do with causing the climate change that they are now suffering the consequences of. Last week, a glacial collapse triggered devastating flooding in Nepal and Tibet. Over 1,100 people are confirmed dead. Another 4,000 are still missing. I've seen wide ranges of numbers.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. The videos of that. Did you see the videos when they first started coming out?
I did. And honestly, when I first saw it just come up on my Instagram feed, I had to like double check that it wasn't AI.
Yeah.
Like that was my first thought. Like, oh, this is just some like AI videos. Because the images really looked like something out of like 2012 mm-hmm. or the Day After Tomorrow and like some of those like end of the world movies, because that's how devastating they looked. I mean, one of the first videos I saw, there was water just coming over this big building mm-hmm. and just completely swiping away entire villages. Those images were like haunting and devastating.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe that they were like they were real.
Yeah, I mean, and it was like you're watching hundreds of people die. Like there's no way any of those people it was like ants getting swept away by a fire hose. Like it was like the power of nature and climate change in the face of like our fragile humanity is just like we do not stand a chance.
We don't stand a chance. I always whenever I see any kind of natural disaster videos like that, like my mind always goes to, what if I was there with my daughter? Like, what would I do?
Oh my
I was
God.
Like, what would I do? Like, do you run? Do you just hug her? Like, you know, it's like, it's, that's, I think, the part that's haunting to me is like seeing people trying to run away when they do not stand a chance, mm-hmm. like you said. Like, they just look exactly like little ants running away and there's nothing they can do. Like, mm-hmm. they're very likely going to drown or be stuck in the mud. Like, I just couldn't put myself in that position and think how devastating it is when mm-hmm. there's nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so horrifying. And this is a sort of thing that thanks to a warming climate, it will probably happen more often. Like the Himalayan permafrost is melting and that's the sort of thing that causes things like the glacial collapse that we saw. A member of Nepal's parliament put it to The New Yorker this way, and I kind of paraphrased when I was introing this. Nepal is paying an extraordinarily disproportionate price for crisis it did not create. We contribute a negligible share of global emissions, mm-hmm. yet we sit downstream of some of the fastest warming glacial systems on Earth. It's 100% true. Yeah. And it's something that we're seeing across the global south. Like recently there was an earthquake in Venezuela, and that wasn't caused by climate change, but recovery is exacerbated by the effects of climate change. Yeah. Like, inclement weather makes it more difficult for, like, rescue crews to get places. It makes it more difficult for people to shelter safely. It makes it more difficult for people to get out or to contact families. So it's all so sad. And I, you know, you and I kind of talked about this when we were prepping for the show. But I spent time in Nepal, like, in 2017. Mm-hmm. I did a, like, eat, pray, love thing, except not really eating and not really praying, not really.
Like, did you find love?
I did a walk, walk, walk. I just, like, walked around the Himalayas for, like, 6 weeks. And I haven't been to that particular region of Nepal or Tibet, but I've been, you know, in different parts of the country. And when I say that the country is incredibly remote and rural outside of, mm-hmm. like, Kathmandu and Pokhara and a couple of, like, medium-sized cities, it is so remote. And the way to get aid to these people is, like, so arduous. Like, yeah. you have to take helicopters. The roads are not wide enough to carry, like, big supply trucks. It is just not a place that, like, lends itself to being rescued. How does it – we were talking about this, too. How do disasters like this highlight inequality?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, like, when you were talking about Nepal and, like, the negligible amount of emissions, it's, like, 0.1% is what Nepal is responsible for in terms
one-tenth
of, like,
of 1%.
1/10 of 1%. And now I sound like Bernie Sanders. 1/10 of 1%. So to me, natural disasters always highlight the inequity that already exists in the world, mm-hmm. right? So when you have when you think about, like, Nepal and, like, where it sits, or we're talking about Venezuela, or even what's going on in Puerto Rico with the water crisis, or in Indiana with there also being no water, what it really tells me is that people who had very little or nothing to do with warming the world are the ones that are paying the biggest price. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you have industrialized nations like the United States and other countries that extract natural resources from places like Venezuela, mm-hmm. And other places. And the U.S., you know, for better or for worse, like, it has more money to hopefully respond to these disasters, right? Mm-hmm. Nations that are prone to natural disasters, that are developing nations, have been asking for many, many years for there to be some sort of fund where rich countries can pay into this fund so that when there is a natural disasters, the developing nations can ask for money from this fund.
Oh, kind of like a cap and trade, or like what is done in some places for where, like, polluters pay for
exactly
into, like, the super fund for cleaning up. So similar to that, but on a global scale.
Exactly. So it's like as far back as 1991, climate vulnerable countries were asking wealthy nations to create a fund. And in 2022, countries finally agree to create this fund. But of course, it's, like, totally underfunded. Mm-hmm. Like, there are only $800 million that have been pledged to this fund. And when you think about the devastation, like, even in Venezuela, where there's, like, $20 billion of damage, $800 million, that's nothing, right? Mm-hmm. It's a penny. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be more conversations about how wealthy nations need to pay for these disasters. Not because obviously it's a natural disaster, right? But mm-hmm. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, there's really nothing natural about these things happening, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's not natural for these things to happen. And the response, and what you were saying, the roads are rugged. There is very little infrastructure. Hospitals can't handle the amount of devastation. Mm-hmm. And so it just exacerbates the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, talking about money, I used AI today to figure something out. This is, like, a useful way to use it. But I wanted to know how much money.
I love that you disclosed that.
I know.
Used AI.
I know. I used Claude, but when I was typing in Claude.ai, I typed in Claire.ai because Claire is the name of our associate producer. Sorry, Claire. So I used Claude, and I wanted to know how much the U.S. has pledged to help both Nepal and Venezuela, and how that compares to other expenditures in the American budget. So what I was able to find is that right now Nepal is getting $3.6 million so far. Venezuela is getting about $386 million so far. And the war in Iran has cost $37.5 billion
God.
So far. And so if you divide it, the average cost of the war is about, you know, $206 million a day, give or take. Nepal's total, like, pledges from America is about 20 minutes of war. And Venezuela's is about a day and a half.
Oh, my God.
We're spending all this money.
And isn't that the crux of it, though? Like, yeah. How much money we spend on the military, on wars abroad.
On ICE.
On ICE. That we could be spending to fund education, mm-hmm. to fund relief for natural disasters that we have a big hand in creating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. The problem is ultimately greediness.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I have to say, like, just because I just, like, I'm always going to have a soft spot in my heart for Nepal. I just love it so much. The yeah. people there are the nicest people I've ever met anywhere in the world. They're just incredible. And the natural environment is beautiful. And we're going to put some resources in our show notes if people are interested in donating some money to help out. There are some organizations that are doing some work on the ground there. But if you're interested, check out our show notes and we'll get into that. All right, we're going to pivot to the sexiest topic.
The sexiest topic. I'm only here to be sexy.
All right, Julie, so this is something that's kind of been, like, stuck in your craw. You have the floor. Let me know what's going on.
Thank you. And I know this is dense, but, like, it's really important. And okay. I think that sometimes we have to talk about unsexy but important things.
Okay. I will pause my nonstop pursuit of sexiness momentarily for this story.
I promise it's good information. Okay, so the Social Security Trust Fund already tells you,
yes.
right? Hot topic. So the year 2032 has been dubbed the Social Security cliff. So in about 6 years, the Social Security Trust Fund is expected to run out. And now that doesn't mean that it's going to end all payments. But if Congress doesn't act, Social Security payments will be reduced by about 22%. So imagine living on almost a quarter less when everything costs so much more money.
Hmm.
And the thing is that voters are pretty uneducated about how Social Security works. So it hasn't really been a topic of conversation on the campaign trail, although I think it needs to be. But the senators that we elect this midterm cycle will likely be the ones in office when the trust fund runs out.
Oh, cool.
Exactly. And that's why we need to be asking them, what is their solution to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so far, there's been two main options that have been considered to address the Social Security trust fund's needs, which are to either cut benefits for wealthier Americans or to eliminate the Social Security payroll tax cap. Right now, wages are taxed only up to $184,500, but the proposed change would make that tax rate universal regardless of salary. So if the trust fund runs out, who do you think we should blame?
old people. No, I think it's just, like, I just finished writing, like, a monster script on George W. Bush. Mm. So I'm really kind of mad at
also
him.
Very sexy.
Yeah, so I'm super mad at him right now. But fiscal irresponsibility, specifically in the Reagan years and then again in the George W. Bush years, I think put us on a path for insolvency. And we have not righted ourselves, because the steps that we would need to take to right ourselves would require some people to make some sacrifices who don't like to be asked to make any sacrifices, e.g. the rich.
Right.
So that to me is, like, it's what's wrong in a nutshell. But reading about this story and prepping for this, I was thinking, Julissa, like, we're both millennials, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever imagine retirement? Like, is it something you even think about? Do you, in your mind, are you like, I'm going to get Social Security one day? Or,
yeah, I mean, I do think about retirement all the time. Like, why am I working? Why didn't I retire at 40? I'm 3 years past my retirement, oh, okay. actually. But I think you're bringing up a really great point, which is, like, I think the bigger conversation around Social Security is, how can anybody retire nowadays,
mm-hmm.
right? Social Security checks are really not big enough for people to even live on. And I think about, like, as millennials, not just like our own retirement, but the retirement of our parents, right? Our parents are getting to that age. And so security conversations are not just about old people. They're really about us too, because if our parents don't get enough money on the Social Security check or haven't saved for retirement, then it becomes our responsibility for many of us, right? Like we are our parents' retirement. And so if seniors are going to get a quarter less, like who's going to make that money up, right? For many people, it's going to be their daughters, their sons, their extended family.
It's probably going to be their daughters, though.
It's probably going to be their—I mean, why did I even say sons? Like, that's a lie.
It's going to be their daughters, unless they only have sons, and then the sons are going to fight over whose job it is. But, yeah.
Then it's going to be our job.
It's going to be
It already is my job in my family, so.
I think that's, like, a really good point. And, you know, just to back up what you're saying, a lot of states have something called filial responsibility laws, which put children on the hook for parents' bills. So they can, even if you have no contact with your parents, they're rarely enforced. But even if somebody has no contact with their parents, they're completely financially severed from them. In certain states, hypothetically, a medical facility, a long-term care facility, whatever, could pursue the children of people who run out of money for money that is owed by the parents. And that's something that really scares me. And that's something we've wanted to do a show about for a while. So I don't want to get too in the weeds about it because I'm not like an expert. But it's just, I think people don't want to think about this either.
They don't want to think about it. And like you said, the people who are most poised to contribute are the ones who don't, right? Like, why is there, I was talking to my friend about this yesterday, and she brought up the point that, like, why are we taxing up to $184,000? Like, it really should be we tax people after $184,000 to infinity, right? Like, people who make less than that are the people who would benefit from having those extra couple hundred dollars in their paycheck. Like, that's the people who make more than that are the people who should be paying for it.
Absolutely. And those people rely upon, benefit from, and oftentimes exploit the people that are making less than that. You know, their lifestyle is brought to you by the service workers who make their food, or the person who cleans their house, or the person who does their gardening, or the person who helps change their bed sheets when they go to the hospital. Like, those are the people that are, like, supporting their comfort and their lifestyle. And so why aren't they the ones paying into what comes next for these people, for the workers?
Exactly.
I think that's a really good point. Well, I don't think that people are going to want to talk about this, but eventually we're going to get to a point where
we have to ask. We have to like be like, what is happening? What people should start asking this question on the campaign trail, and they should also be asking that question of their current Congress people.
I mean, I've been thinking a lot about Coyote versus Acme because that movie just came out and a lot of people really like it. But I think, to use a metaphor I think of a lot, like, you can only continue running off the edge of the cliff for so long before you look down, look up and go beep, beep, and then like fall. Like there's only, you can only fake it for so long, and eventually you reach the end of when you can fake it. So scary.
And
times.
I think I made that sexy.
I think you did. You made that very sexy. Thank you, Julissa. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more news. Hysteria is brought to you by Quince. You know those pieces in your closet that you find yourself reaching for over and over again? The sweater that somehow works with everything, the jeans you know will always fit just right, or the bag you carry everywhere. Those are the pieces that earn a permanent place in your wardrobe, and that's exactly what Quince does so well. Quince makes elevated everyday essentials using premium materials like Mongolian cashmere, organic cotton, and washable silk. The designs are timeless, thoughtfully crafted, and made to be worn again and again. Their 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters start at just $50, giving you the softness and quality you'd expect from a luxury brand without the luxury price tag. Quince also has premium stretch denim, leather bags, and footwear, and beautiful 14-karat gold jewelry that can be the finishing touch that pulls the entire look together. Right now, I am wearing Quince jeans. I absolutely love them. They are like a dark denim. They are not giant wide leg pants. I just can't with those every single day. They fit me really well. They recover really well from being washed. I love the stretch. They look super high quality because they are super high quality, and they cost a fraction of what other jeans cost. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just apparel. Quince brings that same approach to everything they make, from hotel quality bedding and bath to kitchen essentials and thoughtfully designed furniture. They make well-designed pieces for everyday living. Find the fall pieces you'll reach for most at Quince. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/hysteriapod. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns, now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/hysteriapod. Hysteria is brought to you by Helix. I think we're experiencing the worst heat wave of the year in my neck of the woods right now. I need to be cold when I sleep, but I can only run my AC bill so high. Luckily, my Helix mattress helps keep me cool at night. Its technology prevents sweaty nights and helps me get some actual quality sleep. I have the Midnight Lux mattress with the Glacio Tex cooling cover and cool force layer because I don't play about having a cool night's sleep. Helix has over 20 mattress models, so you can find the perfect model for you. I've had my Helix for years now. It's durable and high quality, but it still feels brand new. It's genuinely one of the best upgrades I've ever made because a good night's sleep is priceless. Whenever I sleep at a hotel, I miss my Helix. And Helix makes it so easy. They deliver your mattress right to your door with free shipping in the U.S. They have a 120-night sleep trial and limited lifetime warranty. Rest easy with seamless returns and exchanges. The Happy with Helix guarantee offers a risk-free customer-first experience designed to ensure you're completely satisfied with your new mattress. Helix is the most awarded mattress brand, and if my opinion isn't enough, it's also tested and reviewed by experts like Forbes and Wired. Go to helixsleep.com/hysteria for 27% off site-wide, exclusive for listeners of our show. That's helixsleep.com/hysteria for 27% off site-wide, exclusive for listeners of our show. helixsleep.com/hysteria. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that knows how to hedge its bets. Okay. A North Carolina Republican congressional candidate named Lori Buckhout has been banned from the prediction market Kalshi for placing a bet on her own congressional race in violation of Kalshi's insider trading laws, rules. Buckhout is running to unseat Democratic Representative Don Davis in North Carolina's 1st District, which is considered a probable pickup for Republicans because North Carolina just did some partisan redistricting. But I don't know if it's a probable pickup anymore because this fucking dumbass did some really stupid stuff. So Buckhout is considered an insider. You're not allowed to trade as an insider on Kalshi. They have like the flimsiest rules. They're like wet noodle rules, bare minimum shit. You are not supposed to place bets on things that you would have inside information about, e.g. a race you are running in, a game you are playing in, you know, stuff like that, right? Yeah. A business that you help run. But here's how you know that she's a real genius that could take some changes to Washington that are much needed. She bet $1,000 that she'd win her own campaign. She's been fined. She's been fined $2,589.
That worked out.
And 96 cents and faces a 3-year ban from the website. Buckhout herself characterized the move as dumb. And then she tried to pivot to being like, you know what American people really want? But anyway, it was
funny. At least she's self-aware that she realizes that it was dumb. It's like, honey, if you want to place a bet, you place a bet to take the opposing side of it so that you win anyways. It's like one of those things where like, well, you know, if I lose my race, at least I won some money. If I win my race, who cares about the money? Because I won my race.
Exactly.
That's the logical, smart thing that you would do.
Yes. I mean, and you used to work on Wall Street. It's called hedging. I was, before we recorded, guys, I was like telling Julissa that I think that this is a good way to handle like sports disappointment. Like if my heart is really like behind a team, if like the Minnesota Lynx make it to the WNBA finals again, I'm going to like bet against them because in case they lose.
I could never do that. I could never like just thinking about placing a bet against like the San Antonio Spurs or the Texas Longhorn. Like it just makes my heart like tighten. I'm like, I can't do that. I can't bet against him. But that would have been the smart thing to do when I went to the NBA finals, paid a ton of money for that ticket, and then we lost against the Knicks, which is like, I could do a whole hour talking about that series.
Wait,
but maybe I should have done that.
I didn't know you went to the finals.
I went to the finals because I was like, I thought the last time the Spurs were in the finals, I didn't make it. And I was so mad at myself. And I said, when the Spurs make the finals again, I'm going to go no matter what. And mm-hmm. so I went to game one. Like, I took myself to San Antonio, bought a ticket, went to the finals. We lost. And at that moment, I was like, I don't care that we lost because it was so much fun being there. And like, we're going to win the series anyways. I should have placed a bet against the Spurs and at least made some money.
Lesson learned. I mean, it sounds like a really head versus heart situation for you.
I know. And you know what? This is why I don't work on Wall Street anymore because.
Yeah, you're not supposed to get your feelings involved. I want to talk about political influencers. You had a really interesting story you wanted to talk about this week about like who is delivering messages, where they're coming from, and who's paying for them.
Yeah. Okay. So, first of all, let me say this. If I try to influence you to buy tequila, which I will eventually, not just buy it, but drink it, or subscribe to a magazine or even like use a beauty product on social media, I have to tell you that it's an ad, right? There are like very clear guidelines that mm-hmm. if I'm trying to influence you to buy something, I have to put hashtag ad, I have to use this, the paid campaign link on Instagram. Like I have to tell you mm-hmm. that I'm getting paid for this. But if I endorse a congressional candidate, for example, or a presidential candidate, I don't have to tell you if that campaign paid me. I can just pretend like I'm just doing it because I really believe in them mm-hmm. without disclosing that I'm getting paid. And in fact, there are only 4 states that have laws or regulations requiring content creators to disclose paid political messaging, but they only apply to state and local races. So again, congressional candidates, presidential candidates, there are no rules regulating any of that. The New York Times published an article over the weekend that highlighted the different ways that campaigns have taken advantage of these sparse rules. For example, there's an influencer called Josh Green who took home $21,500 to post in support of Tom Steyer after initially being critical of him.
Okay, pause. Where's my Steyer money?
That's what I said.
I'm just like, you know what? I would have. I did vote for him.
There was,
and I would have posted about.
There was a Latino influencer, Carlos Espina, who has 14 million followers on TikTok. Although his account was banned earlier this week, but side story. Uh-huh. He got paid $400,000 by the Steyer campaign. I'm like, bro, you could have called me. I mean, I didn't vote for him, but.
Attention, progressive billionaires. We are right here. We are right here.
I am ready to take your money. I will disclose that I took your money, but
I'm not.
I will take it.
I wouldn't do like a, you know, like a J.D. Vance if he was like, here's dollar sign. A
he
lot.
Couldn't
like,
pay here, me enough money.
Right.
There's
right.
Not
here's
enough money
a
in the
burlap
world.
Sack with a dollar sign on the side of it full of gold coins like Scrooge McDuck's, you know, money bin. I would not. But I think if there's somebody that I'm like, OK, this is somebody that I vibe with, I would take money.
Yeah. Why not?
But like the non-disclosure thing seems like
that's the problem.
Yeah,
that's the problem, right? Because Green actually like defended the payment to the Times, framing it as influencers getting paid for their work. Which, by the way, as someone who creates content online, I fully support getting paid because if somebody asks me to do like 10 hours of work to make a reel and they want to pay me $200, which is sometimes what people want of me,
that's crazy.
I like I'm gonna have to get a real job and I don't want a real job. And so then Green claimed that he would only take money from campaigns that he would support anyways, which begs the question, if you were to support them anyways, then why the lack of transparency?
Yeah. It just all seems very slimy.
It is slimy because the only way that we're finding out about this is through campaign records and like how many Instagram and TikTok like casual viewers are going to go to campaign finance reports to find it. And even if they were, many times it's obscured because it's done through like agencies, right? So you don't know, it'll just say like they pay this agency for social media work and then that agency's paying the creator the actual payment. So it's mm-hmm. hard to even know who's getting paid.
Right. Well, and the scary thing to me is there's so much more money on the Republican side. There is so much more money on the Republican side. And the amount that's going to get thrown behind, you know, or is probably already being thrown behind 2026 and 2028 is kind of staggering and exhausting. And
Yeah. I mean, Josh Green is like a liberal example of a creator, but creators getting paid and not disclosing it goes across the political spectrum.
Did you know that Laura Loomer gets paid to not post about companies?
She gets paid to not
post. Because
well, she's so I mean, toxic. I don't post about a lot of companies. Yeah, my
I know.
Money.
I know. Well, like, because she's so toxic. You have to get more toxic is the thing, Julissa. You have to become horrible.
I have to become a toxica.
You have to become horrible. Step one, become horrible. Step two, threaten to be horrible to companies in a way that they do not want to be associated. And then step three, profit. That's what Laura Luna does. There are people that have that like.
I talk shit about companies all the time.
I know. You got to do it. You got to do it worse. You got to be meaner. You got to be more irresponsible.
Okay, got it.
I feel like the lesson of today is like the least you have to do with making the world a better place, the more you profit.
I know. I'm doing it the wrong. We're doing it the wrong way.
I mean, this morning, right before we recorded, I found there was this article posted on Semaphore by Max Tani that was about something called ghost creators.
Yeah.
And we were both kind
that's of, the most insidious. That's even more insidious than what we're talking about.
Well, because at least with these ideologues, they are being paid by a specific campaign to post specific things. But there is this other layer of content creation influence social media that is just, I guess, content. They're just kind of like clout farms. Mm-hmm. So there will be like identical, like, almost identical videos being made, kind of spamming and like carpet bombing, essentially YouTube, with political messaging. And a lot of it is conservative political messaging, but the person behind it is not a partisan at all. All they're trying to do is get the most followers and likes and engagement.
Right, to monetize the content.
To monetize the content and then offer up their services to help artificially boost other content. Yeah. So they, you know, Tani uncovered like there's certain videos that are where an actor will play a progressive and then there'll be, you know, a couple months later he's now a big like fan of Donald Trump. And it's very crazy because it like the person behind it doesn't even care who wins.
Right.
They just care about what gets attention. And what gets attention are the kinds of videos that angry people who are isolated in their home
watch.
It's
just rage bait, essentially.
It's essentially rage bait. Yeah, a lot of Zoran Mondani videos, a lot of AOC
videos.
Yeah, and it's all brought to you by somebody who only cares about
making money.
Literally doesn't care about anything else. And like sometimes the copy is generated by AI. Sometimes it's
AI generated videos. So it's just like it's not even real people.
Yeah.
It's like the whole thing is AI generated just to be able to cash in on the views. And then when it is real people, I saw this one, this woman in Missouri who posted videos from three different accounts, first promoting the Steyer campaign in California, Stevenson, Michigan, and the affordability crisis in Wisconsin. And her whole aesthetic change in each of those videos to like make it seem and make it look like she was from those places, and she's actually from like Kansas.
Okay.
Or from Missouri. Kansas,
Tom
Missouri.
Steyer was paying Kansans when there were two perfectly good Californians right here, actual Californians who are registered to vote and do vote.
And do vote.
Okay.
And do vote.
Okay, Tom.
And do vote.
Now you're on my shit list. I wish I could rescind my vote for you.
Basically.
What was her Wisconsin costume like? Was it like a messy bun?
She was wearing like one of those military style hoodies.
Oh, a Packers one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. That's what she was wearing.
Blaze orange would also
be. Yeah. And then she had, and then in another one, she had like two braids going, like she had two little braids. Like, so she was just, she might as well have been a paid actor.
Yeah. Because she is.
Yeah.
She's, oh my gosh. That's
essentially, that's what she is. And you know, the thing about all of this also makes me think, the reason all of this is possible is because there are no regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is regulating who can post things. And like if you have a political ad that you post on a billboard or a political ad that you hear on the television or on the radio, it will say, right, this ad was paid for by such and such campaign, or this ad was paid for by this PAC. There is disclosure that comes along with it. And ultimately, that's what I would like to see on social media.
Because, like mandatory disclosure.
Yeah, like there is when I try to sell, 1800 tequila.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I have to say, this is an ad. I do actually really like 1800 tequila. And I drank it way before they paid me to post about it. But even then, I had to say, #ad.
Yeah, right. I also think that, like, in addition to regulations, there needs to be, like, enforcement mechanisms that are pretty severe. Like, on – like, there should be, like, a one-strike-and-you're-out rule when it comes to social media platforms that, like, if you violate this, if you're found to violate this, then your account gets banned for, like, a certain amount of time.
Because it's not a gray area. It's either you got paid or you didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It shouldn't be a gray area. But don't worry. The campaigns, political campaigns, influencers, and AI-generated nonsense people are not having all the fun. The Trump administration is utilizing secret influencers also, the Trump administration. On Sunday, The Washington Post reported that the Pentagon has secretly installed conservative veterans with large followings in civilian government roles to push the agenda of Trump and Secretary of Not Being Gay, Pete Hegseth. I'm sorry. I have to say that every time we talk about him because he's the most overcompensating ball of something that I've ever seen. Anyway, the suspected creators are mostly on X, of course, because that's where everybody is. Mm-hmm. Everybody terrible, that is.
Yep, that's why I'm not on it anymore.
Yeah, it's terrible. And they're reportedly either functioning as special government employees or highly qualified experts.
That's the problem. Anybody with a mic now can call themselves an expert.
Yeah. Yeah.
And pretend like they are.
Yeah. I mean, and former Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who I think is probably going to run for governor of Illinois at some point because he's just,
why not?
Otherwise, he's just posting. Mm-hmm. But he criticized the Pentagon, Leslie. He posted how many more people that are blue check marks on X that are putting out information on behalf of the federal government and Donald Trump and the Republican Party are actually special government employees. So a special government employee can be employed by the government for, I think, 130 days mm-hmm. before that all expires. But highly qualified experts, HQEs, can be employed for much longer. Does this seem like it should be illegal? Like, what? Why are we paying for this?
You know, on a scale of, like, illegal, this should be at least a little, like a little, just like a little illegal, you know, like at least a tiny little bit illegal. To use taxpayer dollars to pay someone to basically be your online cheerleader, because that's what these people are doing. They're just like, you know, they're like praising Hegseth and like praising Trump and just saying all like just being very complimentary. Mm-hmm. That's what they're getting paid to do, to paid compliments to Hegseth, basically.
But why are we paying them for things that they did for free before? It seems like a waste of government resources.
Yeah.
You know, like they did that anyway. So like, why are we paying them? I think it's also insidious because for those people that we were talking about, you know, the YouTube people who are just sitting there like consuming rage bait after rage bait after rage bait, this sort of artificial boosting of Republican talking points and Hegsethian bluster is it creates this artificial sense of the normalcy of their insane opinions. It creates an artificial sense that what they are doing is right and what they believe is right and that a lot of people think the same way as they think, even though Donald Trump's approval ratings are – how low are they? Like, I don't know.
I don't know where they are.
They're about as low as like scabies at this point. I don't know why I just grabbed scabies from my head. But it just – it feels – very insidious because it like creates an alternative reality that these people can choose to live in.
And the thing is, like, the people that that like were part of this article, who are, I guess, the employees in question, they're not just like any veterans. They're like colonels, you know? They were like army, like the highest position you can have in the army, the highest position you can have in the Air Force. So like they are like quote unquote like serious people who used to have serious jobs who now are getting paid to just say crazy things on the internet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they should make bank at Blackwater like every other. I'm just kidding.
They should go for Fox News. You know,
those
are the people who should be paying more money into the Social Security fund to bring it back to my sexy topic.
I think that if you are a special government employee that is paid to pretend that you're not working for the Department of Defense, your salary should be taxed at 100%.
100%.
And I think the next administration – I think we should start making wild – wild pitches about what the next administration is going to
do. Why not?
Operation Clawback. What we're going to do is every ill-gotten gain that happened during the second Trump term, we are going to claw it back. The United States government is going to use its power to just suck that back out of your bank account like a vacuum cleaner.
Yes, and that should go to pay for my daughter's Montessori school.
Well, I think if we take about 3 Department of Defense employees' salaries, that should cover about 6 months of childcare in LA, right?
God, yes.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, finally, we're going to talk about this NFL guy.
Yes.
Fake NFL guy.
Can't wait.
Hysteria is brought to you by Ritual. We know the importance of a good night's rest to keep up with the demands of a busy schedule, but it can be tough to switch off and relax at the end of a long and tiring day. Ritual's Magnesium Plus is a blend of magnesium bisglycinate and tart cherry powder for mind and muscle relaxation, helping you to unwind from the day and support restful sleep so you can wake up ready to take on the next day. I love magnesium. Ever since I had kids, I've had a problem with like getting Charlie horses in the middle of the night, and it absolutely sucks. And magnesium is the only thing that has helped calm my twitchy muscles. I don't know if that means that – I think it probably just means I needed magnesium. I love Magnesium Plus because not only does it calm twitchy muscles, it helps me sleep better. I can't explain it. I don't feel like I'm being sedated. It just – allows my sleep to be of a higher quality. Magnesium Plus features a blend of clinically backed magnesium bisglycinate and tart cherry powder formulated to help support mind relaxation, sleep, and muscle recovery. Ritual selected a bioavailable form of magnesium that's gentle on the stomach. It is clinically studied to support stress and mind relaxation, ease leg cramps during pregnancy, and also after, if you're me. It's also great for supporting period cramping and providing PMS support. The tart cherry is made from Michigan-grown Montmorency cherries, clinically studied to support muscle recovery and quality sleep. It's backed by over 20 studies and 15 years of research. So sit back and raise a glass to your new evening ritual with Magnesium Plus. Save 25% on your first month at ritual.com/hysteria. That's ritual.com/hysteria for 25% off your first month. Hysteria is brought to you by Willie's Remedy. Sometimes after an exhausting day, I need something to take the edge off that's not going to make me need to take the whole next day off. This summer, I found my signature chill-out drink. Willie's is a premium THC-infused social tonic crafted by the legendary Willie Nelson. Inspired by Willie's way of living where peace flows freely and hangovers are a thing of the past, it is a low-calorie, low-sugar alcohol alternative that actually works, delivering a fast-acting, euphoric social buzz without the regrets that come with alcohol. Willie's social tonics come in 5 milligram and 10 milligram doses with best-in-class flavor experience, so smooth and balanced you barely realize you're drinking a THC product at all. You can enjoy the tonics as a shot, sipped over ice, or mixed into your favorite mocktail. My favorite thing is mixing it with a little bit of a like cherry sweetened water and ice. It's so good. Willie's is not that feared edible you ate too much of in college. Hey, how did you know about that edible that I ate too much of in college? Ad copy. Each bottle of Willie's is third-party lab-tested for accurate dosage so you can trust and customize your experience. Willie's unique blend of THC, CBD, CBG, and L-theanine delivers a feeling of calm, clarity, euphoria, and relaxation. One shot of Willie's helps you relax, unwind, and de-stress. It's perfect for taking the edge off at the end of a long day or socializing with friends. Willie's offers the kind of feeling that makes good company even better. Willie's ships directly to your doorstep in 40-plus states and has sold out 3 times in the first 6 months with over 300,000 plus happy customers. So order now at drinkwillies.com and use code hysteria for 20% off your first order and free shipping on orders over $95, and live like a legend. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who are glad that Texas Republican Senate hopeful Ken Paxton is as ugly on the outside as he is on the inside. And also, he can't dress for shit. Take a look at this picture, Julissa. This is – check out this fit. This is a picture of Ken Paxton at a campaign event that occurred over the weekend.
I would support the Secretary of Transportation talking about these boobies.
Oh, yeah. Those boobies.
Those boobies he can talk about.
Turnabout's fair play. If he's going to talk about boobies, we're going to talk about boobies.
100%.
And Ken Paxton's boobies.
But I don't actually want to talk about Ken Paxton. I don't want to look at this picture. Why? Like,
they are suboptimal. I think that, you know, it's really funny that the party of like reclaiming masculinity has a man running for Senate to like be the kind of totem of that, looking kind of like Grimace on Botox or Grimace on Ozempic. I think it's like when he just grimaced
and just all fell down.
Yeah, he's not eating enough protein, but he's on Ozempic, and like the extra skin is just kind of hanging off of him.
As someone who's in a weight loss medicine listen, I take my protein intake very seriously. It's in because my coffee because I don't want to look like that. I mean, I could never look like that because it would be impossible.
There's no way. You're way too beautiful to look like Kim Paxton.
Yes. Also, I thought it was like, I thought everybody just knew that you don't wear purple and brown and like khaki. Like,
it doesn't look good.
It does never, it never works.
You know what? He's really divorced right now. Like, a wife would be like, these are not your colors. I mean, I
don't know. The women that some of these men are married to, I don't know. I don't think they would know either.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Can we? I don't want to look at this picture anymore.
All right, fair enough. We're going to move on to our favorite story of the week. Okay, this whole block is just going to be stories that feel fun because this week has, like most weeks, has been pretty heavy. But we're going to get into some lighter stuff. I've been obsessed with this story.
I know you have.
Our producer, Caroline, has been obsessed with this story. I've been spamming the group chat with videos of this story. It is a gift that just absolutely keeps on giving. Dejon Love is a 34-year-old man who defrauded at least 26 women out of $1.3 million since 2022. He met – that's a pretty good living. He's pulling in like a good $300K a year.
That's
just scamming.
And probably wasn't taxed.
And probably more, because that's what we know about. So he met the women online, started romantic relationships with them, and then he deceived them with fictitious investment opportunities. One of the ways that he got the women interested in him was that he pretended to be a player for the San Francisco 49ers. And here is how he did that. Now let's watch some clips of this video. We'll describe it to people who are listening to this instead of watching.
that cut.
Okay, that video was of a man
of running around.
A scrawny man. A scrawny man wearing no shirt, black shorts, black basketball shorts, and a 49ers helmet on a beach running a route that is ass. It's just like not even a good route.
Not even a good route.
But he was pretending to be a wide receiver, and he was defrauding women, I guess, who don't know what a good route looks like.
Who don't know what a good-looking man looks like.
Let's but start also, there. Like, the football helmet thing, to me, is the funniest aspect.
He took it everywhere with him. Like, yes. He took it to the beach. He took it to defraud a poor small business owner who had, like, hamburgers. And then, like, he, like, messaged a hamburger shop and was like, I'm a 49ers player. Like, let's collab. And then he went to the restaurant and took his helmet with him. He would take his helmet to his car, to, like, everywhere he went, he carried his helmet. And I've come to believe that helmet is, like, his stuffy. Like, he just can't go. It's like his little comfort. He's like, I'm lying. I'm defrauding all these people. I need my little comfort stuffy. I can't go anywhere without it.
Oh, my God. It's like when my two-year-old gets home from, like, childcare, she immediately just runs and finds her blanket and, like, holds it.
That's Dejon's. Dejon
Love. He went by several names, but Dejon Love.
Is that his real?
That's
like,
the name that I've seen in
name?
All the stories, but I have not done a deep background check.
You know, if
Mr.
you're
going to
be defrauding people, Dejon Love is like,
okay.
If that's your name, if that's your government name, this is what you were destined to do.
Oh, that's a good fraudster name for sure. Yeah. But he was, and also he's got the same last name as the Green Bay Packers quarterback, Jordan Love. So he told some people that he was related to Jordan Love. He also told some people that he was from Switzerland and worth a lot of money. Let's watch a video of him.
Explaining that?
Like, yeah, one-to-one video describing his wealth.
Here, that was another 20. The Rashard meal is $300,000. This ring is about $15,000, I believe. And I'll show you all some more in a second. I love jewelry. It's been my thing. I got veneers in. It's another
$50,000. I love that he's flexing his veneers.
I'm on the whip, so that's why. I'm going to show you the whips, too. So what I'm going to do is I'm about to just flip the camera. This is my bed. This is about an $8,000 bed.
$8,000 bed?
Here's my TV. This TV is about $8,000.
No, it's not.
I love
Lord.
Sir, you got scammed.
They give us these.
That is the house that, like, you're 25 years old in your slut phase, and you wake up and you're like, oh, fuck, I don't like
being
in this house.
Where, yeah, it's like, oh.
Well, it's like the window coverings came with the unit.
Yep.
There are no decorations up.
Nothing on the walls.
Just like plugs into the wall, not even covered up or like Yeah.
Yeah, like they're like no interior designer touched that. Also, I love that he was like flexing his veneers as like being rich, mm-hmm. you know, like I have straight teeth. I have veneers. Did you catch that? He was saying that his veneers were $50,000. It's like, wow, that's a lot of dental work.
Yeah. You have just little Gollum teeth underneath those. Like that whenever I see somebody talk about having veneers, I'm like, oh, I know that your teeth are like little points. Mm-hmm. And that's – and like your real teeth are just like the mouth of Gollum. But yeah, this – okay. So the thing I love about this story is that the rabbit hole just like keeps going. There are so
many videos
and so many women who had – who were like exposed to this guy who didn't fall for it. So like he cast – the widest net. The way that I found this story was I was on TikTok and I saw a video that was this woman saying like, now I've dated a few NFL players. Here's how to make sure you're not being scammed. And she did like, you know, she had the influencer voice. First, you're going to want to go to the website and check the roster. Just like the most basic shit. Like if someone tells – if I had a friend come to me and say I'm dating this guy or like this guy reached out to me who says he's like on the 49ers, I would like pull all the shit up. I would like have his high school stats in 10
yes.
minutes. I would know what he won best whatever his senior year. I would like know where his last three addresses were. It's not that hard to find.
It's not.
It's not, especially if you're psycho like me. But like this, it just reflects such a deep incuriosity from the like people who ended up being scammed by him.
When I was telling Fernando about this, he was like totally victim blaming, right? And I was like, mm-hmm. do not blame the victims. But also, yes, I understand what you're saying, that like the first thing you would do is to like Google it. Although mm-hmm. I read somewhere that initially, because he's been posting as an NFL player for such a long time, that if you Googled him, the very first thing that would come up as like the AI Google summary would be like Dijon Love, a 34-year-old NFL player for the 49ers, because AI is just pulling
from the internet. Okay, so
like if somebody just did a quick Google search, they might be like, oh yeah, he's a real football player.
Right.
Like, they would not do the deep dive that like you and I would probably.
Okay, so minus one for AI. We had plus one earlier for the stats about the war, but we're back at zero. Net zero. AI. So there was some like reason for people who had like confirmation bias, who they want an NFL player to be dating
an NFL player.
Yeah.
You know?
But also like, have you seen real NFL players responding to this video?
Yes, that has been my favorite. All of the like, I think like the LA Rams did a video asking their players like, how they would prove that they play in the NFL.
And one of the players was like, I just carry my helmet everywhere, I always have it with me. And he's like totally deadpan, so funny. But then like seeing actual NFL players being asked about it and just looking at their physicality versus like the physicality of this person who is running routes on the beach wearing a helmet and no shirt, which by the way, I'm calling it right now, helmet, no shirt, and black gym shorts is the low effort Halloween costume of 2026.
Yes.
I think you're going to see a lot of guys shirtless wearing 49ers helmets and black basketball shorts.
I love that.
It just – it feels to me like it's a lot – it's like confirmation bias meets gullibility and a lack of media savvy. But, yeah, he made $1.3 million. He had an accomplice named Taylor Jamie Chan, who I'm very curious about.
It's yes.
like an 18-year-old accomplice.
Like, what was he doing? How was he helping?
I want to know how they met. How did you meet this 18-year-old who pretends to be your financial advisor and, like, scams women out of, like, transferring money into a fake bank account?
I don't know. Is it, like, are they – I don't know. I guess if I was – the first person I would go to is, like, my cousin. I'd be like, hey.
But they're like, I don't think they're cousins. I don't think these two are cousins. But they're currently in custody in Boise, Idaho. Another part of his legend that I really liked was where he said he was from Switzerland. And his family is one of the richest families in Switzerland. But he doesn't appear to speak any languages that are frequently spoken in Switzerland. Like, he doesn't seem like – if he was a child in Switzerland, why doesn't he have, like, any kind of an accent from having spoken, like, French or German or any other – you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just very odd. Then he moved to Irvine to spend time with his mother. And they own Gucci stores?
Gucci stores. That was my favorite. My favorite was that he said shareholders of a specific Gucci store.
Like Gucci's a franchise, like Chick-fil-A. Everybody, you can buy in, you can get on the list, and if you pay a certain amount, then you're a franchisee.
It's like you could tell that like he did some research, you know, to make sure he had some of the lingo down, like, yeah, you know, that he knew, like, shareholder, investment, return, profit. Like, every once in a while, he would, like, spit out some of these words.
Right.
But then, like, I feel like he started getting lazy in his scamming because he would send women, like, pre-recorded voice notes.
Oh, God. There was one that was five minutes long
where he was giving his whole backstory and, again, talking about how he was rich. And I'm sensitive to being, like, the way he pronounced something was so awful because, like, I have an accent and I don't know how to pronounce half the things. But I did laugh when he mispronounced real estate investor. Like, he said it, like, in a very, like, weird way where I was like, bro, that's your first clue, ma'am. That's your first clue.
All right, moving on to another story that brought us joy. Look, if somebody's got to be deported, if somebody has to be deported, why not this guy?
Why not this guy? Oh, my God. This is going to feel like honey in my mouth when I say this next part.
Okay.
Ex-gay, which—
That's not a thing.
That's not a thing,
no.
But let's go with it. Ex-gay British right-wing white supremacist grifter Milo Giannopoulos has been arrested and deported.
Aww.
Womp, womp. And I didn't think it was possible for me to agree with, like, any deportation— But here we are. And for those that might not be familiar, Giannopoulos posted on X last summer, "We have got to deport millions and millions and millions of people. Without that, nothing else matters."
Hey, he's putting his money where his mouth is.
He's one of those millions.
He's backing it up.
He's backing it up. According to ICE, Milo entered the U.S. legally in 2019, but then overstayed and failed to show up in court for his immigration hearing. And last summer, as I said, he posted in favor of the immigration crackdown. But after his fallout with MAGA and his alignment with Marjorie Taylor Greene, the crackdown turned right back on him.
Oh.
Okay, there's more to this story.
I'm just thinking about Francesca Ramsey and her ukulele singing the Leopards Eat the Face songs. I think she did post about this.
I have a tiny little violin this big.
Oh, that's really small.
So Laura Loomer claims that she reported him and she's taking credit for his deportation. Do you believe that she's responsible?
I don't know, but I love that she's running her mouth about this. For once, I'm like, yes, Laura Loomer, keep running your mouth. I love watching this. I'm like the let them fight meme at this point,
yeah.
You know, like, let them fight. I'm fine with, like, the ultra-right grifter class consuming itself because that appears to be what's happening.
They should just eat each other.
They're just going to eat each other. I mean, and Laura Loomer is, you know, it's really funny. Now she's, like, going after immigrants or whatever, but Laura Loomer is a Jewish woman. And does she think that eventually it's not coming, like, the same forces that she's trying to harness are not going to turn on her?
I mean, that's the thing about, like, anytime that, you know, I see, like, a Latino who voted for Trump and, like, their mom got deported or their wife got deported or is in a detention center. I'm like, did you not think it was going to happen to you? Like, do you think that just because you voted for Trump that he cares and he's going to somehow protect you? Like, no, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I want to be careful because I do think that, like, people are getting deported who should not be getting deported, who are, you know, showing up at their immigration court hearings and getting picked up at their immigration court hearings. Like, he just, Milo?
It doesn't matter.
Milo?
Say his name however you want. He's
Milo. Milo, like, just straight up didn't show up. You know, he had a court hearing. He just didn't show up. And so ICE, I think it was ICE that picked him up at the New Orleans airport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, if you're not showing up to your immigration hearing and you're saying that millions and millions of people should get deported.
It's like, yeah, you first.
The day it shows up at your door, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should volunteer.
You first.
You know, you should be like, I am here illegally, so I volunteer.
Did anybody make more hay out of the death of Chris Hitchens than Milo Yiannopoulos? Because, like, Chris Hitchens, I feel like if Chris Hitchens were still alive, Milo wouldn't be a thing. Because, like, Milo has a British accent for people who have not had the displeasure of like,
hearing him
talk.
Yeah.
But I feel like he gets a lot of mileage out of being, like, out of people thinking people with British accents are smart and witty and fun and, like, delightful. Ooh, he's so delightfully wicked. And I think Chris Hitchens did it, but way better. Like, Milo is, like, the the Timu Chris Hitchens, sort of. And if he, like, again, if Hitchens hadn't died, and when he died, he was like a total asshole. But
the only thing that would have made it better, like, I don't know where he got deported to, but like people are getting deported to like countries in Africa that
they have no con.
That, like, why are they there? You know? So, like, I don't know. I hope he got sent to somewhere far away.
I don't know. I just, I'm just in my head, I'm like pitching the show of a white supremacist grifter getting deported to Africa and having to try to like, navigate.
Oh my God. Okay. I cannot get over the Dijon love story. And you just reminded me that I wanted to say that it's obviously going to be a Netflix movie.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's so much footage already. They don't even need a camera.
Yeah, just a documentary.
It's essential. They can just like play the clips and then like intersperse. I don't. Why am I directing this Netflix special
for free?
You guys have your own people. Another story of an awful man who experienced a consequence. Earlier this year, the Met made the interesting choice to honor known racists.
Interesting, for sure.
Interesting. Interesting in a Minnesota way, which is like a passive-aggressive way to say like fucking terrible. Interesting choice to honor known racist and anti-Semite John Galliano with a Costume Institute exhibit. The Met Gala launch of the exhibit was scheduled on Holocaust Remembrance Day, which, you know, I got to say, if you're working for the Met Gala, it's very important to look at a calendar. You know,
yes.
You can't. So there was intense backlash. Galliano himself took to Instagram to announce that the exhibit will no longer go on as planned. In the announcement, he did not use any racial slurs, which is like great. It's above what I expected from him. To be clear, Galliano's anti-Semitic past is like, it's not a misunderstanding. It's not like he said something about like not liking Benjamin Netanyahu. He has said just straight up Nazi shit.
I think he said, I love Hitler.
Yeah, he's...
Like, that's pretty...
That's pretty Nazi. I mean, that's literally... That's what the Nazis did.
Exactly,
yeah. Said that, yeah. He was convicted of an anti-Semitic hate crime by a French court in 2011. The incident cost him his role as creative director at Christian Dior, where he had worked for 15 years. But then after a couple years off and a stint in rehab, he was all fixed and was named a creative director for Maison Margiela, where he worked for another 10 years. So... now, what's going to be the theme of the Met Gala? Like, what do you think they should do instead? Since it's not John Galliano, what should the Costume Institute spotlight?
I don't know. But I know that we're talking about this particular designer. But actually, to me, the decision was Anna Wintour's to give him this retrospective. Mm-hmm. And I think as much as we're talking about, you know, John Galliano, we should also be talking about Anna Wintour. And, like, what was she thinking?
Mm-hmm.
And not just like this Met Gala, but what was she thinking last year with, mm-hmm. you know, Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez being like the main sponsors of the thing? Like,
yeah.
I feel like she needs to just like retire. I don't know if she has grandkids, but if she doesn't, she should just go play with somebody else's grandkids. Like, ma'am, like, just retire. Like, you're not making good choices and decisions.
Well, what if she did retire and she's been body swapped? How would you know it was the real? I mean, how would you know it was the real Anna Wintour? I used to really like dream of doing a prank, I don't like flash mobs, but I thought this would be a funny version of a flash mob to just hire a bunch of actors in New York City to show up dressed just like Anna Wintour at the same time at like a fashion week event because she has like this distinctive bob with bangs and the glasses. It wouldn't be hard for somebody who was like a skinny old lady to just pretend to be Anna Wintour and just like not ever smile and kind of stick her neck out like a turtle a little bit. I think that she might have been body swapped. The real Anna Wintour is like on a beach in Bora Bora just enjoying herself.
You know what? She might be, but she's still like – she's still texting someone.
She's still texting, being
like, John Galliano is like the person. Because she has been like John Galliano's like behind the scenes cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's who helped him land his new job after he got fired from Dior.
Mm-hmm.
Like she has been, she has been trying to rehab his image.
Mm-hmm.
Like she set up a meeting with like Jewish leaders after the incident.
Mm-hmm.
So like she's the one that has been like trying to fix him and fix his image so that he can continue to be in the spotlight. And I think that a lot of people do this when you have someone who's like a creative genius, and therefore we allow them to be like racist and horrible people because their creative genius is just so great.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and it's usually men that are allowed to do
it. It's always men.
Yeah.
I've yet to think of a woman who has been allowed to say these horrible things and made such a wonderful comeback. Because, by the way, he has a collection with Zara coming out this month. So it's not like he's, like, not working. You know, it's not like he's, like, he just didn't get to have an exhibit at the Met Gala. Which, by the way, only three living designers have ever gotten a retrospective while they were alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, it's a huge honor. Mm-hmm. That Anna Wintour was trying to bestow upon him.
Can I propose an alternative?
Yes,
which
please.
It's not my idea. I saw it on Instagram. And I think it was Allure magazine ran a piece on this. Dolly Parton. It should be.
Oh my God.
Dolly Parton. The theme. Imagine a Dolly Parton themed Met Gala of people dressing in a sort of country western, sparkles, gaudy, like big colors, big hair, big boobs. Like, you know what? That's one that Lauren Sanchez Bezos would actually have fit in with, because she would be able to pull off the like gaudy country western wear.
She better not show up in a freaking prom dress.
A mother of the bride gown from like a mother of the bride that's way too involved in her son, or a mother of the groom gown. Yeah. And she's like way too involved with her son. But yeah, Dolly Parton. Exhibit Dolly Parton's like performance costumes, her guitars.
Yes.
And I think I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Erin, you're giving people way too many great ideas.
There's an article in Allure magazine. Okay. I just want to elevate it. I want to amplify it. And I want everybody else to like agree, like yell about it loud enough that maybe we'll actually have an interesting Met Gala next year.
Okay, let me text Anna.
I know whose numbers you have in your phone. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty. Hysteria is brought to you by Little Spoon. Anyone who's a parent knows feeding decisions aren't a one-time thing. You make them again and again and again, stage after stage. Did you know they have to eat 3 times a day? It's crazy. You have to feed them 3 times a day just for 18 years. And too often the options out there, whether you're feeding a baby, toddler, or big kid, just don't meet the standards you want for your child. Parents are constantly asked to compromise on ingredients, nutrition, transparency, even safety. And it makes you wonder, why does it feel like there are more high-quality food options for dogs than there are for kids? On top of everything else, parents are juggling. That constant uncertainty is exhausting. And simply put, families deserve better. That's why I decided to try Little Spoon, and I'm not turning back anytime soon. It's one trusted place to shop meals and snacks for babies, toddlers, and big kids, all made with real ingredients without having to rethink every choice or lower your standards at each developmental milestone. It shows up at your door and takes one big decision off your plate without compromising on what's important to you. And knowing you're helping set your kid up with healthy habits for life, that's the kind of peace of mind that matters. My toddler loves the biteables. The cut-to-size, pinchable meals make the transition to table food so easy and support palate expansion and real nutrition at the same time. As appetites and opinions grow, Little Spoon does too. My oldest loves the heat-and-eat plates with superfoods and hidden veggies, great for picky eaters and getting mealtime on the table in minutes. Little Spoon means having some peace of mind. With 100-plus ingredients banned across the board, I don't have to overthink labels or second-guess what I'm serving. It's already been thought through for me, and that confidence makes all the difference. Feeding the kids doesn't have to be complicated. Little Spoon makes it easy with real, nutritionally balanced meals and snacks designed for every stage. It shows up ready to go, takes the pressure off, and somehow still gets devoured, veggies and all. No artificial dyes, flavors, or sweeteners either. And you know what? That's a win I'll take every time. Get 30% off your first order at littlespoon.com/hysteria30 with code hysteria30. That's littlespoon.com/hysteria30 with code hysteria30 for 30% off your first order.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C. with even more podcast panels and workshops. Plus, there will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.
And welcome back. You are listening to Hysteria, the podcast that thinks the most offensive thing about that Callaway golf ad was that it featured people playing golf. I hate golf. Let's watch the ad. Julissa hasn't seen it.
Do not touch my new driver.
Well, that's aggressive.
Yeah.
I don't get the big deal. It's just a driver.
Johnny, no. No.
Johnny, no. Don't do it.
John.
No.
Don't.
No, please. No, don't.
Even know what it is I am.
It's over.
It's like, what am I supposed to buy from this? Yeah, so Callaway Golf is apparently manufactures golf sticks. I don't
and
even.
And as soon as you touch them, you become
crazy.
This aggressive, crazy person.
Yeah, and so a lot of people had issue with the fact that it features a woman being pushed down to the ground because she's about to touch this guy's driver and he has been driven insane by the quality of this golf stick. And I am going to be calling it a golf stick. No, but I'm like, if golf has no haters, I am dead. I think that golf is an affront to nature. I think it is an elitist, horrible thing that is environmentally devastating. And I think that every golf course should be converted to low-income housing with green space in the middle that is shared.
100%.
Every golf course.
Every golf. Like, I don't – first of all, like, I went golfing one time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know – You've got to understand that I used to work on Wall Street, right? Where like golfing was like the place to be, mm-hmm. and I only went once.
Well, golfing is where inside boys pretend to be outside boys.
Yes, and I hated it. I was like, I just want a drink. Like, can I just sit in the golf cart and like be like all? Can I just be, you know, driven around in this little golf cart and drink? Like, this is terrible. Like, I don't like this. It hurts my hips.
Like, I mean, I just think, like, just whatever. The ad presented a lot of, like, culture warriors with the opportunity to virtue signal for how, like, offended they were or not offended they were as part of their, like, personal brands of being, like, woke or not woke. And it's just – it's all very tiresome at this point.
I'm also realizing we have very different algorithms.
I know. It's funny because I, like, I hate golf so much that I will – like, I hate its existence.
Yeah.
I have golfed before. I took golf in college. Am I good at it? No. But do I want to be good at it? No. I find it offensive. Like, why are we turning vast swaths of space – why are we cutting down the trees – like fertilizing.
Why are we trying to build a huge golf course in Puerto Rico where there is like where people don't have drinking water and we want to take all that water to water the grass,
which is not even a native plant to the places where I just don't even get me started. I will fight. If golf were a person, I'd fight it.
You'd push it down like
I would push it down
like that guy pushed down that woman.
Yeah. All right. And that's another reason not to golf because the men are – look, I got to say this. My father-in-law golfs, but he is the exception that proves the rule. And, like, he's a great dude. Everyone else who golfs who I do not already like is bad until proven otherwise.
I can think of a couple people that in my life that golf that are, like, great people.
Just play pickleball. It's way less environmentally awful.
Just go to that – I do – you know what I do like?
Hmm.
I don't know what it's called, but where you go and, like, you just hit the ball and it's, like, a big
driving
net,
range?
A driving range.
Yeah.
But there is one specific – like, in L.A., there's one place where you can go Topgolf.
Oh, okay.
That's what it's called, Topgolf. I do enjoy Topgolf.
It looks cathartic to just, like, hit a ball really, really far. But you can do that with a baseball. You could just throw up a baseball and hit it and cause some property damage in dense urban environment.
I'll try that next.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I didn't tell you to do it because that sounds like a very, very bad advice. Okay, before we get to Sandy Petty, some announcements for the class. At Crooked, we believe the answer to right-wing authoritarianism is a big, welcoming, fun, pro-democracy movement. Conversations that don't just focus on what's broken, but also what we can do to fix it. That's what CrookedCon is all about. CrookedCon comes just after the midterms in D.C. from November 5th to 7th. It's either going to be super fun or everyone's going to be super mad. We think it's best to get together in person to meet all the like-minded folks, hash it out, and see if we can get a functional winning party out of the deal. I will be there. Join us at Crooked Con. Head to crookedcon.com for tickets, lineup announcements, and more. Okay, let's get to Sani Petty. I'm going to go first. Got a Sani slash like news update. Okay. The Hysteria podcast collectively has been obsessed with a specific case out of Arizona of a woman named Laura Owens who alleged that former star of The Bachelor, Clayton Eckhart, got her pregnant with twins, only to have it revealed that she had scammed not only him, but multiple other men in her past into fake pregnancies, entanglements. So she did that multiple times. And then Clayton Eckhart was the first one to like really fight back and get like attention on the case. It has been a saga that has been going on literally since I found, like right before I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, who is now two.
Oh my God.
So like it's literally been almost, it's been like 3 years that this saga has been going on. And it started because she filed a petition for like a paternity parenting agreement in an Arizona court. So she started this, right? Now, at the end of
and
all
she
of it,
wasn't pregnant.
She was not pregnant. She was never pregnant. But she, like, bought a pregnancy belly. She, like, made, like, fake medical records. Okay, you need to listen to the podcast Love Trapped because we had the host and creator and producer of Love Trapped on this show.
I am writing that down.
It's going to take you – it's going to steal days of your life, and you are going to be so glad that they were stolen by the pod. It's so good. Okay, so we had the creator and, like, producer of the show, Stephanie Young, on this pod. I have been following the case before it was a podcast. Okay, now at the end of the saga, Laura Owens, the scammer at the center of it, has pled guilty to 4 counts. She was originally charged with 14. She accepted a plea deal. She's pled guilty to 4. Carries a maximum of like 12 years in prison, like various frauds and fabrications and stuff. Meanwhile, her parents have declared bankruptcy. Her dad was a prominent Bay Area radio personality. And you just have to listen to the podcast if you haven't listened to it. It's like it gets crazier and crazier. As you listen, you have to listen to it. But anyway, Laura Owens has pled guilty. It feels like kind of anticlimactic. A couple of the men who have been at the center of the case have posted or indicated that they feel kind of like, okay, now this is it. Her sentencing is in October, so we'll find out where this goes from there. But given her tenacity and tendency to kind of drag things on, we'll see if this is the end of the saga or if there's just another chapter to go.
My God. Julissa, I am going to listen to this.
You have to listen to it.
I wrote it down. I'm going to listen to it on my way home.
It is like my favorite. It's like cozy crime where it's like it's true crime, but nobody's dead. So like it doesn't feel as like exploitative. It's just kind of like a scammer with the audacity. It's really good. Okay.
Oh, the person who did this podcast should do the podcast about Dejan Love.
Oh, yes. Stephanie Young, I know you listen. I'm going to tag you. I'm going to tag you in our episode this week, Stephanie, because I think that you should absolutely – that should be season two.
That should be season
100%.
100%. We have so many great ideas today.
I mean, we're like a fountain of ideas. We really should just do this without microphones on just to come up with good ideas.
Yeah.
Julissa, what is your Sani Petty?
Okay. So I am feeling very petty about the fact that more dates have been added to the Usher slash Chris Brown tour.
And you can't go. No, I'm just
Yes, I'm so annoyed because where are my free tickets to this concert? If it was just Usher, honestly, like, I would want to go. But I just can't get over how we've, like, forgiven Chris Brown for all the terrible things that he's doing. And listen, like, I don't think that we should judge people by the worst thing they've ever done in their life. However, if you keep doing that worst thing over and over and over again.
Right.
Like, I don't know that I'm ready to forgive you, you know? Like, right. It wasn't just, like, what he did to Rihanna, which we all remember what her face looked like after he beat her up. But then, like, in 2013, he allegedly punched Frank Ocean. In 2013... same year, he was sentenced to 1,000 additional hours of community service after the DA found problems with his prior community service records. Again in 2013, he punched a fan in the face for refusing a photo, broke the man's nose, went to rehab, later was jailed on a probation violation. In 2014, he was sentenced to 131 days in jail for that probation violation. In 2015, he was accused of hitting a man in an argument over a baseball game. 2016, accused of beating a woman and stealing her phone. 2016, accused of threatening another woman with a gun. In 2016, he was sued by Mike G, his own image consultant, for false imprisonment. An assault.
Whoa, I didn't know about half of these. Is this a section of his Wikipedia entry? Is it just like violence?
Basically, there's probably a header that's like violence. This list keeps going. Like 2017, two more things. 2018, another thing. 2019, something else. 2020, something else. 2024, he was hit with a $50 million lawsuit, allegedly that he and his entourage beat four concert-goings backstage in Fort Worth, Texas. Like the list keeps going.
Oh,
like
my
this
God.
Man... is not well. Mm-hmm. This man has continued to exhibit very violent behavior. So why is Usher on tour with him? Why is everybody that's going to the concert buying tickets to support this man who has continued to allegedly beat people up?
Yeah.
Has been found guilty of some of these crimes, pled, you know, has plea deals for some other ones. Like, why are we so quick to forgive men? It's like what we were talking about with John Galliano, right? Like, when you think someone's a creative genius, you're like, okay, I forgive you for doing all these things. But by the way, Chris Brown's music is not even...
No.
It's like mid.
He's not the John Galliano of R&B music.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, John Galliano is actually a talented designer who is a terrible person.
Yes.
Chris Brown, mid artist, terrible person.
Terrible person.
You got... Yeah.
Like, so I'm like... At this point, it's like on us, though. You know? Like,
yeah.
Well, not on me because I didn't go to the concert.
Yeah.
But on all those people that are going to the concert. Like, if we continue to support these people, then anytime an artist or someone famous or even, like, people in our real lives beat a woman up, it's going to be like, well, we forgive you. It's fine. You know, we're going to continue to support. Like, there are no consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no well, consequences, you and I are talking shit about him and insulting his music, but I don't think he cares.
I don't think he cares.
But it's like, Usher, come on. After that delightful Super Bowl halftime show, you're going to do us like this? You don't need to do this.
And the thing is, like, Usher can just go on tour by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he would sell out, you
mm-hmm.
know? Like, he doesn't need Chris Brown.
Mm-mm.
Chris Brown needs Usher, I think. So why is Usher doing this? Why are people buying tickets to this concert? There was actually, like, a video I saw where there was someone interviewing people, asking them, like, did they know some of these things? You know, like, did you know that Chris Brown did this, and that? And some people would say, like, yes, and, like, still went to the concert. Some people would say, like, no, I didn't know that. But I think we should be asking people. We should be asking people, like, why are you supporting this concert? Why are you supporting this man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that is a perfectly great petty. I don't even think it's petty. I think it transcends pettiness. I think mm-hmm. it's, like, a legit thing.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a legit thing. But yeah, shame on you, Usher.
Shame on you, Usher.
Shame on
everybody that's going to the concert. And if you're going to this concert, you better never listen to a Rihanna song or buy any Fenty products.
You cannot buy any Fenty products. Not even – look, I'm wearing a Fenty product right now. I'm
there you go. Because you didn't go to the concert.
Because I didn't go to the concert. I'm allowed.
You're allowed.
All right. That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Julissa Arce, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having
listeners,
me.
Audience, if you want to pre-order Julissa's forthcoming book, you can pre-order it now. It is called Holding On to What's Mine, Bad Bunny Winning and Cultural Power. Your Bad Bunny book.
My Bad Bunny book. The cover, I'm obsessed with the cover. It's like Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl.
Oh, amazing.
And it's like bright yellow. And I'm also really glad that when I came to the show today, I was like, I finally have something else to promote. Because for the last 4 years, it's been, you sound like a white girl. You sound like a white girl. I'm like, I have something new. I can go on the show again.
Amazing. Well, listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com is the email address where you can reach us, and there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Caroline Reston, Claire Fogarty, Kendra James, Adrian Hill, and me, Aaron Ryan. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Rachel Gajewski, Delon Villanueva, Claudia Sheng, Mia Kelman, Jay Banks, Charlotte Landis, and Jordan Cantor. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C. with even more podcast panels and workshops.
Plus, there will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.